You needed the apparent solitude and isolation when the new experiences of spirit life were forced upon you, in order that you might the more fully understand them. When the need came to you for companionship, you called for it, and behold how quickly we responded to your call. I stooped and gathered a cluster of daisies which grew at my feet. They had long been my favorite flowers, so common and yet so beautiful. As I held them, regarding them with the same admiration I had ever felt for them, a new revelation came to me. The flowers were speaking to me. Not in a word language, but in a soul language which I understood for the first time. How often had I been both soothed and perplexed in the earth life in the companionship of nature, which I had always loved with a passionate devotion. 15 Each tree, each leaflet, each blossom, seemed to have a message for me, but I knew not their language, and I only half gathered their meaning, as one from gestures and expression may gather a glimmering of the meaning of a stranger or guest who speaks only in a foreign tongue. I was certain of the message, and I often conjectured what it might be. Sometimes I thought I comprehended it, and the belief was a very pleasant one, but my spirit understood their language, and was glad in consequence. How can I tell you of their message? It was, as I have said, not in words, but it was a direct communication of emotions, unmeasured and unfettered by language. How shall I translate to you a strain of rare melody? How with mathematical precision give the aesthetic results of the harmonious blending of colors? How, then, to your earthly natures convey the sense of perfect peace, joy, hope and faith which these flowers brought to me, not as a vague intangible feeling, but as a positive and assured possession? This experience gave me my first actual realization of my changed condition, that I was no longer mortal, but a spirit, freed from the limitations of mortality, and with a spirit's perception and possibilities. Heretofore I had been in a maze of wonder, everything was so new and so strange. Emotion had so crowded upon emotion that I had realized nothing, and all my feelings had still been from the earthly standpoint. I seemed to have been a mortal who, by some chance, had strayed into the realm of spirits, but the flowers, the daisies which grew in the fields, and are trodden heedlessly underfoot, had reminded me of my spiritual birthright, and that I understood them was the surest proof of the truth of their message. Sweet, perishable things! I exclaimed as I pressed them to my bosom. Even you have your lesson for me. How strange it is that I am so slow to comprehend that even the flowers of the field are capable of instructing me. I am bewildered. My intelligence has not yet developed beyond its earthly measure. I do not yet even realize my own privileges and possibilities. 16. That is not strange, my child, said my guide. It would be most strange, indeed, if it were otherwise. How many children of earth realize the possibilities of their spirits while they are yet in the earthly condition? And when they come here, and the horizon is so suddenly widened around them, it takes time for their vision to extend to its utmost limits. But I have something to tell you of the flowers you love so well. They are imperishable here. Death and decay wait not on them any more than on your own spirit. Oh, mother, is that so? I exclaimed in an ecstasy of delight. How often on earth it has pained me inexpressibly, to see these beautiful creations of nature, which have by their beauty administered to our finest and the most sensitive needs, droop and fade, and then be cast aside to perish. I could never shake off the feeling that we were guilty of ingratitude in thus trampling them underfoot when they no longer gave us pleasure. You must no longer call me mother, said my companion with a sweet seriousness. Your own mother is waiting to welcome you when you are prepared to see her. To her the title belongs, and it would pain her to hear it bestowed upon another. Call me Margaret. I am still your guide as long as you need my assistance, but I shall become daily more and more your companion. We shall presently be sisters, not mother and daughter. Margaret, my sister, I said, kissing her hand, no name could suit you better, no name be sweeter for me to utter. See, I fasten my daisies, my marguerites, upon your breast. You belong each to the other. You each speak the same languages to me. Yes, they are my flowers, as they are yours, she answered simply, that proves our spiritual kinship. 17 I cannot tell you all we talked about that beautiful heavenly morning. There seemed so much to say, both to Margaret and to my children, that for a time I was oblivious of all else. Then the remembrance came to me of the friends I had left behind in earth life. Why had I not thought of them before? Because events and experiences had been pressing on me too fast for any more to crowd themselves in. But a panic suddenly seized me. In their bereavement, sorrow, how overwhelmed with grief they would be. How could they get along without me? I must go to them at once, and seek by some means to make my presence known and felt, and to comfort those stricken ones. But when and how should I find them? I looked around me in dismay. I was in the spirit land, how could I find my way back to earth? How I had left the earth I knew not. I had probably been borne thence by spirit forces, while my spirit was yet weak from its new birth. No sooner were my wishes spoken than my boys said, "We will show you the way, we have traveled it so often, we know it well." Immediately the scene around us dissolved until all that remained was a luminous cloud, and we descended, half floating, half walking, until I found myself in the old home I had known so well. How strange it seemed to glide, not like a ghost, but a veritable ghost, silent and unseen, through its rooms and passageways. They who had been so long used to my presence, and who were even now mourning the departure of my spirit with sincere and overwhelming grief, if they were but to catch a glimpse of my spirit form as it thus wandered, would be almost paralyzed with terror. I realized as never before how inconsistent is the fear of apparitions. Eagerly I sought to comfort the mourning ones, and what agony it was even to my newly emancipated and happy spirit, to find that I could not make my presence known. "Oh, what shall I do?" I exclaimed in dismay. 18 "You can do nothing," returned Margaret. "You are yet so new to the spirit world, and have so much to learn. Some day you will know how to reach and communicate with your friends. Now you must permit me to do the work for you." Gently she approached the weeping ones, softly laid her hands by turns upon their brows, whispered a few words of comfort in their ears, and to my surprise their tears ceased falling, they became calmer, and their conversation, which had been entirely of their loss, now took a happier and more hopeful turn. Margaret beckoned to me, and we left them thus, and were on our way back to the land of spirits, though I fain would have remained longer. "No," said Margaret, who seemed to divine my very thoughts, "you are not yet able to help them, and their grief only pains you." "Yes," again in answer to my thoughts, "I shall do your work for you, I shall not forget or neglect them. But why cannot I do that which I so long to do, that which seems so easy for you?" "Oh, you have so much to learn," replied Margaret half smiling. "You have not yet escaped from the limitations of an imperfect nature. You are still under the rule of law and ever will be. You cannot communicate with your friends until you have learned first the proper methods, and next how to use them. Did you think because you had become a spirit, that all things were possible to you? I can reach them because I have so long been familiar with the means of communication, and especially because of my long association with you. I have also been brought en rapport with your children. I have in a certain sense been their spiritual mother as well as yours. But do not be impatient. You have all eternity before you in which to learn." I will not go into further detail of how the hours passed of that first day in the spirit world, how unconsciously I, who have so recently left the earth, drop into the earth language. There shall be no night there. And there are consequently no days, as I once measured, and as you still measure time. 19 Time in the spirit world is measured only by emotions, events and deeds, counting it thus, how long that day was. When my spirit was strong enough to bear their presence, and my desire had summoned them, my father and mother came to me, and many friends who had preceded me to spirit life. Need I tell you of the joyous greetings, the words of affection, and all the tender confidences which spring up when those long separated are at last united to part no more? I realized that I was indeed in heaven. On this my first day was given a realization of its bright and happy side, and no hint was then imparted of the darker phases of the spirit life, and the trials and severe experiences it held in reserve for me. For Spirit Land is not all beautiful. There are dark places and darkened souls, as there are on Earth. Nor have our disciplines ended with our mortal existence, but are continued here, and must continue until our souls are entirely purified and refined. It was probably the next day as you count time that Margaret came to me and said, "There is an interesting ceremonial about to take place on Earth, at which I think you would like to be present." I had not thought of it, my funeral. One does not think of one's own funeral as an event of immediate occurrence while one is still alive, and I had not yet been able to realize that I was dead in any sense that made a funeral necessary. We attended, of course. There were the usual outward signs of mourning, the black plumed hearse, the casket covered by a heavy pall, the somber and cumbersome garments. An intense desire seized me to preach my own funeral sermon. Spirits frequently controlled mortals and spoke through them, why not I? I looked my wish to Margaret, and she smiled and said, "You can try." Footnote: On attending one's own funeral, this book link tells the same. 20 Alas! I knew no more how to carry out my purpose than does a child to direct and control a steam engine. So after an impotent effort, I took my stand beside the casket and listened to the discourse. How weak it seemed, how utterly inappropriate to the occasion. If I could only have spoken, I would have uttered words which should have poured a flood of light regarding the spirit life into the minds of the listeners, and comfort and consolation into their hearts, so that their cheeks should be wet with tears of joy instead of sorrow. Oh, how hard it was to remain silent when there was so much to say. For a final hymn they sang, "Nearer, My God, to Thee." It had always been a favorite of mine, and perhaps in remembrance of this it had been selected. I had once sung it weakly and tremulously, with the voice of faith and longing. As it was sung at my funeral it fell upon the air like a wail, so impregnated were the voices with the sorrow of the occasion. But there was one singer to whom all their ears were deaf. Yes, I sang gloriously, my voice rang out in a glad shout of triumph. And when on joyous wing, cleaving the sky, sun, moon and stars forgot, upward I fly, still all my song shall be. Nearer, my God, to Thee. Nearer to Thee. It was not merely that the hymn revealed itself in a newer and fuller meaning to me, but there was rapturous joy in the discovery of a new possession, a new faculty of expression. I could sing. I could sing even better than I had hoped or wished to sing on earth. To me one of the saddest things of the earth life had ever been that the spirit was in all directions hindered and curtailed in its expression. Through the weakness of the body it must content itself with imperfect, inadequate utterance, or else remain dumb. But freed from the immortal frame, I had acquired a new and a wonderfully expressive language, the language of music. And so at my own funeral I sang triumphantly, though mortal ears heard me not, and as I sang, lo! A chorus of angel voices far and near joined in the hymn, which rang from earth to heaven a ladder of divine song, up which it seemed as though all souls might have ascended to the vestibule of paradise. But though the strains rang out jubilantly in a mighty gush of music, the mortals heard only their own weak, sad wail, and were deaf to the harmonies of heaven. When the casket was opened, I was the first to gaze upon the face of the dead, so, too, was I the last. There were numerous and costly flowers, but I was glad they had placed in the folded hands, the thin-veined hands, which, whatever they had found to do, had done with their might. Not lilies, few are worthy to bear them, but daisies which brighten by their beauty the highways and byways of the commonplaces of life, the daisies she, I, had loved so well. How the persons of the pronouns perplex me, I seem not to know whether I am speaking of myself or someone else. I tried to take one of these daisies as a memento of the occasion, and transplanting it to immortal bowers, see if I could not bestow upon it the gift of immortality. But I was astonished and perplexed. Though I could consciously touch it, I could not remove or displace it. So even spirit had its limitations. Again Margaret smiled, and again she said, "You have so much to learn." Then I laid beside the perishable earthly flowers, the spirit blossoms I still bore with me, but after a moment snatched them back again. No, I could not condemn the precious spirit treasures to the darkness of an earthly tomb. Earth to earth, dust to dust, ashes to ashes, but spirit to spirit. My tears fell on the coffin form no less than those of the mourners. I seemed to be taking an eternal farewell of my past self. Thenceforward all connected with my earthly life would live only in memory. 22 The thought was an inexpressibly sad one, though there was so much of sorrow in the past, so much that I would naturally be glad to bury forever not only to sight but to memory as well. I stood by the open grave as the casket was lowered into it, and a sense of the full meaning of death came over me, as it had never done before, not even since my entrance into the spirit world. I was done with earth forever, save as my work might temporarily call me thither, and as the clods closed above my cold clay, I was almost overwhelmed with the realization of the solemn future, which I now faced with all its responsibilities and its possibilities. I was dead and buried forevermore to earth. I had been resurrected in the spirit world. 23. Chapter 3. The Day of Judgment and the House Not Made with Hands. I cannot tell you all the experiences which crowded upon me in these first hours and days of my changed condition. Everything was so new, so strange, so different from what I had anticipated. Scarcely a moment that did not bring me fresh knowledge or new experience, and I was so eager to learn, that I sometimes pressed forward faster than my capacity for reception or execution justified, and then I met checks and disappointments. Disappointing and even painful was the conviction which gradually forced itself upon me, that the spirit has its limitations as well as the body, that in being freed from the fetters of flesh which so long seemed to shackle it and hold it down to the weak potentialities of earth, I had not passed at once into a state where infinite wisdom or infinite power was possible to me. True progress is always slow. But I could not content myself to progress slowly, so, with an impetuosity which often defeated its own object, I sought to grasp that which could only come as the reward of long and patient endeavor. Nor were these outward conditions the only things which took me by surprise. I myself seemed changed, radically changed, yet when I came to reflect, I realized that it was only in seeming. I had passed while on earth for a cold, almost a hard, unsympathetic woman, unswayed by passion, and with a nature incapable of either great joy or great pain. 24. None, not even those who thought they knew me best, dreamed of the storms of passion which sometimes swept through my soul, swaying it hither and thither as a reed is shaken by the blast. No matter what my grief, my friends seldom saw me in tears, and they knew not how I choked them back with almost death gasps, because I scorned to seem weak. I could feel a dagger at my heart with an unmoved countenance, and even smile and utter light, idle words, or hum the fragment of some familiar song, while it was being turned and twisted to do greater execution. Few ever noticed the convulsive clasping of my hands in which the nails set deep into the flesh, the only outward sign I gave in the presence of others of the agony within, but when I was alone, then all restraints removed, I could wail, moan, wring my hands, and give myself up to a perfect abandon of misery. Of joy I might probably have known as great an extreme had the opportunity come to me, but I dared not. Joy seemed so uncertain, so elusive, I dared not grasp it, lest it vanish from me, and so gradually had seemed to die out of my heart the capacity for more than a tranquil, negative happiness, and even this, as the years wore on, had become narrower and narrower. Not that I had grown morbid or discontented, but the pain of my life had seemed to numb me to all sensations but those of suffering. But here, who was I? What was I? Only my old, true self, after all, but deprived of the screen of the earthly body, behind which I could conceal my emotions, without the mask, which I had worn so long that even I had come to regard it as the true semblance of myself, by the means of which I could present an unperturbed exterior while I was being shaken and torn by inward tempests. The words of the familiar song came back to me, "We shall know each other there." Truly, yes, without disguises or concealments, and we shall learn to know ourselves as well. This self-knowledge is not acquired at once. I realize that it is only beginning with me, for when I have come to a thorough knowledge of self, I shall have acquired a knowledge of all things, even of God. 25. How patient my friends were with me. How they taught me and helped me or checked me and bade me restrain my impetuosity, as the case demanded. The bonds and bars of earth life being removed, I was like a child to whom is given unwonted liberty. I knew not what to do with it or with myself. I wanted to realize all the possibilities of my new existence, before I was fully prepared for any of them, and as a consequence of this rashness, the lessons which the future had in store for me sometimes came with a suddenness and a harshness for which I was little prepared. Does not each spirit find its own appropriate sphere? I asked, urged to the question quite as much by curiosity as by a genuine desire for knowledge. I seemed to be hovering on the borderland of many spheres, with no place assigned me. Where am I to find my home and my work? The sphere you are to occupy will be of your own choosing. An ordeal is before you. I wish that it might have been delayed, Margaret replied with a troubled countenance. But here in the spirit world desires are answered. To many the ordeal is so tempered and softened by time and circumstance that they scarcely realize they have passed through it until the end is reached, that none can escape. It comes to all in some one form or another. Your impatient nature, which cannot wait until the future develops itself, but must snatch at impending events and draw them untimely to you, brings you face to face with something which will require all your courage and fortitude to meet. My impetuous nature. I had come to believe myself the most patient of women, but when I began to reflect, I realized that my much prized patience was but a thin, outward crust, by which I had deceived the world and even my own self, while the genuine impatience of my nature had boiled and surged within, unchecked and unquelled. 26. I turned to reply, but found myself alone. A sense of injury came over me. I was to meet an ordeal, and yet all had left me to meet it alone. Surely this was not kind. But while this feeling was still fresh in my mind, it was quickly obliterated, or at least lost sight of by that which I next experienced. Now how can I describe to you that which has no parallel on earth? I can give you only an imperfect idea of what now occurred, though it came to me with a force hitherto unparalleled in either my earthly or my spiritual existence. The air seemed filled with a strange murmur, and clouds descended and shut from my view all outward objects. The murmur increased until to my astonished and dismayed ears it seemed a roar, and the clouds rolled one upon another, until they took a definite shape, and this was what I saw and heard. The story of my life was being told in tones that seemed to me must reach to the farthest heavens, and its events were pictured before me by the tossing clouds. I use the words heard and saw, and yet I am not sure that I did either. But the impression made upon my mind was that as if all senses had united in one grand effort to place my past life in its true phases before me. I sat appalled and dismayed, and then as the record of weaknesses and failures went on, I covered my face with my hands, and sank in agony and shame to the ground. Truly there is record kept of every event in our lives. With my belief in spiritualism I thought I had realized that. I knew with a sort of superficial knowledge that not only our personality but our past is written upon all with which we come in familiar contact, so that a sensitive may from even a handkerchief or glove which we have borne about us or worn read the story of our lives, but the belief had conveyed no special meaning to me. I had regarded it as one of the phases of spiritualism, more curious than actually valuable, and now I was being made to read my own record. I understood why my friends had withdrawn. It was out of kindness, not from want of consideration. Was ever sense of humiliation more complete than mine? I thought that even in the earth life I had formed a tolerably correct estimate of my own character and resultant acts, but in these dreadful cloud pictures, how in those deeds on which I most prided myself as having been actuated by the purest and most unselfish motives, did there too often rest the dark blot of unconscious egotism or self-righteousness? Was I then incapable of pure motives? I could not shut my eyes or ears to that which was passing around me. So after a time I summoned all my courage, and since I must sit in judgment on myself, I resolved to do so bravely and thoroughly. How many somber pictures there were! How many half-light, half-shade, but now and then there was a bright one in which some unconscious unselfishness, some little deed I had done and forgotten, without any thought of secret self-glorification, and which had not only been good in its results, but which had sprung from a fountain of genuine good within my heart, shone out like a jewel from the dark clouds which surrounded it. Truly our unconscious acts, be they good or bad, best attest to our true natures. I was too humiliated for either vanity or self-congratulation when these gem pictures appeared, but a feeling of deep yet humble thankfulness stole into my heart, that there were any gleams of brightness amid so many shadows, and even as this feeling crept upon me, the clouds seemed to lighten, and the somber pictures took on a tint of comparative brightness from some unknown source, and the rushing, roaring wind died away into a murmur. The story of my life was told, and I had sat in judgment upon myself, and by my own heart was partially condemned, partially absolved. Then I felt conscious of someone near me, and Margaret's arm stole around me, and my face was drawn to her breast and hidden there. "Has it been more than you could bear?" she asked. "No, for I have borne it," I replied. "See, it is not all ended." "Must I see more?" I exclaimed with a shudder. "Surely the limit of my endurance is reached." 28. But she only raised my head from her breast, and pointed to the clouds which still seemed to envelop us. Hesitatingly my eyes followed the direction of her hands, and behold a strange thing was transpiring. The pictures had disappeared, and the clouds were again in violent agitation. Again they took form, and I saw slowly emerge from their misty outlines, and gradually shape itself, a structure, my ideal house, which I had so often beheld in my waking dreams, and sometimes but vainly wished to realize in the earth life. "Let us enter," said Margaret. We did so, and again I encountered a strange experience. Its walls were covered with pictures, the pictures I had just beheld with such perturbation of spirit. Nothing was hidden, everything stood revealed. But a kindly fate, or shall I say providence, had placed the gem pictures where they could best catch the light, and should be a perpetual reminder and incentive to purer and noble endeavor, while the shadow pictures were put in obscure places, and those which had no touch of brightness in them, but were all dark, were almost hidden from view. It was enough for me to know that they were there, without the agony of being compelled constantly to rest my eyes upon them. There was another peculiarity about this house. Not only the house itself but every article of furnishing it possessed seemed somehow to remind me of something in my earth life, as though it were actually woven or manufactured out of the actions or impressions of that life. "This is your home," again spoke Margaret. "You should be satisfied with it, for it is what you yourself have made it. A house not made with hands." How that phrase came back to me, not made with hands, but built with purposes, endeavors and achievements. How strange that while I was still surrounded by the material forms of earth, doing, or perhaps neglecting my daily duties, I was building myself a house eternal in the heavens. 29. How kind, how good, how sympathetic Margaret and all my friends were to me. I came to realize after a time that what had seemed such a terrible revelation to the spirit world had been only a revelation to myself, that my inmost motives were already known, the good of my nature appreciated, and its evil deplored by those who had, by the laws of spirit life, been permitted to approach within the circle of personality which surrounded me, as it surrounds us all. How tenderly they encouraged me, how lightly they touched upon my faults and failings, and that only to show me how I might remedy them, and grow in spiritual graces as well as knowledge. But, I asked after a time, must these dreadful pictures always remain a terrible, an unendurable reminder of my weaknesses and sins? Those pictures which our own deeds have painted can never be effaced nor entirely hidden, was the reply. But the time will come, my dear friend, strange as the idea may now seem to you, when they will be the most valued pictures of all, when you would sooner part with the brightest gems which adorn your walls than these. You wonder why? Well, I will tell you.